Welcome to Little Atoms on Resonance 104.4 FM, a live talk show based around ideas of the Enlightenment.
Little Atoms is presented by Neil Denny, Padraig Reedy, Richard Sanderson and Rebecca Watson, as well as regular mystery guest presenters.
Little Atoms makes no claims to balance. We actively promote science, freedom of expression, scepticism and secular humanism. This means we can often end up talking about superstition, religious fundamentalism, censorship and conspiracy theory.
Our guests bring ideas that are challenging, sometimes controversial, often polemical, but always interesting.
On the 14th of March 2010, the Palace Theatre in London was host to the Big Libel Gig, a fundraising event for the Coalition for Libel Reform, and supported by Index on Censorship, English Pen and Sense About Science. I'm Neil Denny, and myself and Rebecca Watson of Little Atoms were there on the night, doing our usual thing of pestering the guests and asking them their opinion of libel reform. We also asked all of our interviewees to get into the spirit of the night and libel their fellow guests, safe in the knowledge that they would have been stinking hypocrites to complain. Only on a couple of occasions does this spin off into actual potential libel. See if you can spot these instances. The programme contains interviews with the following people: Simon Singh, Tim Minchin, Marcus Brigstock, Tracy Brown, Richard Wiseman, Brian Cox, Ben Goldacre, Dara O'Brien, Ariane Shireen, Ed Byrne, Shappi Korsandi, and Robin Ince. And the show finishes up with a song, Change the Libel Laws, by Sly and Reggie, the Suburban Pirates, who you may have seen disturbing the peace outside the Palace Theatre on the night. Sign up for the Libel Reform campaign at libelreform.org. Hope you enjoy the show. We've been joined now by the man that inspired this whole evening, Simon Singh.
Hello.
Tell us again why we're here, Simon.
Two or three things, maybe. One is to raise some money for the campaign. We need money to raise awareness about libel reform. Two, to raise awareness about the issue of libel. You know, tonight it's going to be covered. It's been covered on the BBC. It's been covered in the press. Just making more people aware about how horrendous our libel laws are and how they quash free speech. And thirdly, I think it's actually just to celebrate things. Because a year ago, we were in a pub in Pendrell's Oak talking about libel reform. Bloggers and sceptics got together in Pendrell's Oak. And then it was a small crowd of people. It was a biggish crowd of people, but it was a very closed loop. Since then, because of the blogging and the twittering and the podcasting, because of people like Dara going out and talking about this, because of all this effort, people now care about libel reform. The public cares about it. The politicians care about it. We've got an early day motion with 250 MPs signed up to it.
And there's MPs here tonight as well.
Yeah, we've got Peter Bottomley here, we've got Paul Farrelly, we've got Evan Harris. You know, the people here tonight, the people that rushed out and bought those tickets within 48 hours are the people that have been at the heart of trying to galvanise concern about libel reform. So it's a celebration of all of their achievements as well, I think. And that's hopefully something that we... it's going to be a fun and humorous night, and I think a lot of that is down to that we are celebrating stuff.
You sound really optimistic.
Yes, I keep saying this in interviews. I dare any politician to stand up and tell me that we've got good libel laws. And no MP ever dares say that. So the only thing then is, okay, if we've got bad libel laws, we need to change them. Everybody pretty much agrees with that. A majority of the MPs who sign EDMs now agree with us. So it's now just a case of pushing it high enough up the political agenda. Jack Straw's got a working group looking at libel reform at the moment. They met for the last time just 2 days ago. Again, I can't believe that group is not going to come up with something meaningful, which will either force this government or whatever government follows it to change libel laws.
And I'm sure many of our listeners already know that you're currently in a case right now with the British Chiropractic Association. Recently there was an article, I think it was in the Telegraph, about how something like one out of four chiropractors are currently under investigation for fraudulent advertising. Do you think that, how does the BCA feel about their case? Are they losing even though the case isn't decided yet?
I mean, there's been a lot of speculation about how the British Chiropractic Association feel almost 2 years after having instigated this case. I can't really speculate about their mood, their emotions, their state of mind, their motives. That's sort of not really something I'm allowed to comment on. But if I were a chiropractor and one in four of my colleagues were being investigated because of this highlighting issues around chiropractic that's happened in the last year or two, I don't think I'd be very happy.
But this investigation has come about not because you wrote an article about chiropractic, but entirely because they chose to take it to court. That was the sort of catalyst.
I'm not sure. I think the fact that this case went to court, the fact that the issue of libel and science and chiropractic and free speech, all of those issues suddenly stirred up a whole mess, and the word chiropractic kept on cropping up, and people became aware of chiropractic. Again, when we had that gathering in Pendrell's Oak, I can remember Dave Gorman saying, look, I never heard of chiropractic a week ago. Now, I'm a bit worried about it. Nick Cohen, exactly the same situation, that the Observer journalist said, look, I didn't really know about chiropractic a week ago. Now I'm concerned about it. So there's been a general concern about chiropractic that's grown in the last few months, in the same way that we've always had a concern about something like homeopathy. So I think this making complaints about chiropractors for allegedly misleading claims, I think all of that is just about a bigger concern we have about the claims made by alternative therapists and whether or not they're backed up by evidence, whether or not they actually have any effect.
And do you feel that fight against shining a light on alt-med therapies, do you think that's going to continue beyond your case?
I hope so. If my case ended tomorrow, I hope that scepticism and rationalism and concerns about alternative therapies continue into the future. I hope the fight for libel reform continues into the future. And chiropractic is an alternative therapy, but Peter Wilmshurst, who's also speaking tonight, is being sued for libel for criticising the data about a heart device from what might be called a large corporation. So whether it's alternative medicine, whether it's big pharmaceutical companies, the key issue is that we have to be able to make complaints about these. We have to be able to criticise and robustly challenge ideas.
Well, to finish up, Simon, we were inviting everyone we interviewed tonight to libel one of the fellow guests tonight. And I do say one of the fellow guests, so let's stay away from governing bodies of various alternative medicines for now and stick to someone.
You're asking the wrong guy. Are you really,
yeah, we thought you might be sensitive
not
to
going
this.
To, no, I'm not going to get a reputation for it. But I will libel Robin Ince and say he is intolerably and insufferably wonderful. There's so many things that have happened in the last year or two. When people go to these huge events and they see Robin hosting them, and what they don't realise is that Robin is getting the running order together, he's talking to the theatres, he's getting the acts together, and people come to these events and take part in them because Robin's such a great guy and he puts up so much of his own effort and time into all of this. He's a wonderful guy, and again, there are lots of things that wouldn't have happened in this libel campaign if it wasn't for Robin Ince, or Tim Minchin, or Dara O'Brien, or Marcus Bridstock, all of these people putting in their time and energy into raising the awareness of this kind of issue.
Well, that was the nicest libeling I've ever heard.
I'm disgusted. Disgusted, frankly.
All you're ever going to get from me.
And you still probably did, in fact, destroy Robin Ince's
Congratulations. That's true, yeah.
Thank you, Simon.
Take care. Cheers.
Neil and I are sitting here with someone who's been on the show before many times. What is your name?
Tim Minchin.
Tim Minchin. And what do you do for a living, Tim?
I'm a musician.
Okay. And why are you here
Everyone
tonight,
laughs
Tim?
When I said
Why are we all here tonight?
I'm here tonight to do a show to widen people's understanding of the need for libel reform in the UK, my home, adopted home.
And why do we need to reform libel laws?
Because they have been crap for years and years and years, and it's a total embarrassment. It's an international embarrassment, the UK libel laws. It's too expensive for normal people to defend themselves, basically, if people want to sue them for libel. And that's really bad. And I was thinking, it only really hit me today, the thing that's really reason it's sort of come to a head now, even though, you know, as I say, it's been questioned and people have been trying to sort of massage the existing laws for years and years. The reason it's come to a head now that it actually needs to change is that the way we get our information has changed, because the people that we now get our information from, like bloggers and podcasters and all that, they're even more ill-equipped to deal with the 140 times
the
average cost.
They're not big media conglomerates with the money behind them.
That's right. And they don't get to benefit from there's a couple of legal little loopholes that journalists can claim.
The Reynolds and all that.
And and the qualifiers, you know, and they don't get to use them because they're not officially journalists, if they're not. They're just spotty nerds in their mum's basement. And as bloggers' power increases, so too is it important that they are held to account. It's not that we don't need a law holding people to account if they're completely out of control, even if they are spotty nerds in their mum's basement, but they need to be able to defend themselves from libel litigation, and they wouldn't be able to afford it because they're spotty nerds, and spotty nerds don't have jobs.
So what gets you interested in the cause of bloody nerds?
I don't know what my fucking thing is. I like stuff that just makes sense, doesn't it? I get turned on by shit that makes sense. And I came to this through Simon Singh's case, which is the thing that sort of got this particular version of the ball rolling, and Simon had become a vague friend through these, you know, science-y, nerdy gigs, and through having read his books. And when I write my material, although I'm a comedian and I can get away with pretty much anything, because it really is carte blanche when you're on stage, people, if someone tried to sue you, they might be able to, but A, people don't, and if they did, you'd go, well, it's a theatrical construct, you can do what you like. But I actually, on a personal level, try to never say anything that is not demonstrably true. Well, no, that's not true. But when I'm talking about science and medicine and all that, I try to be really thorough. And Simon's always been one of my sources, you know, because someone else has to do the work, so I don't have time to do it.
At the same time, as well, you know, this is the Simon Singh thing is about the scientists should be able to go about doing scientific research without worrying about libel.
Yeah.
You're an entertainer, and, like, you know, last year we had the, you know, the Jonathan Ross, Russell Brand thing, and there's been a sort of chilling effect about, particularly at the BBC, about offence and stuff, which sort of, it's
yeah,
a similar
absolutely.
Thing.
I'm extremely interested. Yeah. Sorry, you have to point out something that should be really obvious to me from the inside out, but my whole shows are about what's offensive, in a way. I mean, I'm not a sort of cutting-edge, trying-to-offend-everyone comedian, but I'm extremely interested in why we're offended by what we're offended by, and even the notion of offence. And there's no doubt that the law in UK, the libel laws in the UK, reflect a general sort of conservatism that is born of some bygone era, you know. And they are two issues. They're obviously very married, but they are two issues, aren't they? The sort of legal conservatism, but the seeming rise of moral conservatism at the beginning of this century, I don't understand it. Is that we're inclined to see patterns where they don't exist, am I right? Are we, is there a rise of moral conservatism?
I think so, definitely.
I would agree with that.
Since the 70s, probably, you know, it's like...
Perhaps it's something that's always there, but manifests itself in different ways. Mm. You know, it's computer games at the minute, isn't it? Whereas it would have been comics 20 years ago or something.
Well, yeah, and if you look at, I mean, I think that the atheist movement has been responsible for a lot of backlash from Christian conservatives who see atheists like Richard Dawkins and Chris Hitchens and those people as threats. So they really ride that moral conservatism train.
I think we need more cuddly atheists. I try to be a more cuddly atheist. I've got a song. Does anyone want to hear a song? I can do a funny song.
Can you do it right now?
it's a problem. Yeah. Prickly atheist.
No, you're. I'd say you're fairly cuddly. Yeah, scale of 1 to 10, I'd say what, like 7.
I'd give you 8, to be honest.
Really?
I'm pretty. I try to be. I have Christian fans. They're obviously a bit thick, but still.
To finish up with then, Tim, we're inviting everyone that we speak to tonight to, in the spirit of the evening, to say something libelous or defamatory about somebody they know or another performer tonight or something.
Who's on the bill?
Well, we've got Richard Wiseman is here, Evan Harris.
Well, Richard Wiseman's illiterate. He gets someone else to write his books. Evan Harris is into bestiality.
Simon Singh?
He's got a false leg.
Was that defamatory?
Well, if people knew that, they wouldn't have a leg to stand on. That's not... I didn't mean that. That wasn't why I said that. It's just where we ended up.
That's Neil brought us here, really. We can.
Yeah, I apologise for that.
How about one more for Ben Goldacre?
Goldacre? You can't defame him. He's perfect. Talk about cuddly. So sweet.
I think that's defamatory enough.
Yeah, that's true.
I think he's writing his MP right now.
Yeah. Goldacre's a homeopath.
You heard it here first from Tim Minchin, if anybody wants to sue.
Thanks,
Thank
Tim.
You, Tim.
Ciao.
We've been joined by Marcus Brigstock. So, Marcus, thanks for talking to us.
That's my pleasure. Thank you for talking to me. It's always nice to chat. Well, we're here tonight, I think, as I understand it, because we appear to be living in a country where people who quite possibly are charlatans have had it pointed out to them that there is a very real possibility that they are nothing more than charlatans. And the punishment for saying that seems to be an extremely lengthy and very expensive and, to my mind, an insane legal process that just shouldn't exist in this context.
Can we just confirm that you ran that quite possibly by the lawyers beforehand? Is that okay? Quite possibly, Charlotte. Are we all right to say that?
I have no lawyers. And look, I'd go further. Personally, I think there's a high likelihood, I'd say probably, charlatans.
Definitely. You know?
You can say definitely. My wife's a big believer in what those people do. It gets a little tense sometimes.
Well, that brings up a good point, I think. Yeah. I see you a lot on panel shows, and I think that you do a great job of representing a very skeptical viewpoint. Do you ever feel yourself self-censoring in order to stay on the good side of these maybe charlatans?
No, not in order to stay on their good side. I mean, I do a lot of stuff on BBC Radio 4, and so even though I'm freelance and, you know, self-employed, bought in to do a thing, and I'm a comedic commentator in that context, when I speak on the BBC, I am to an extent representing the BBC, and the BBC go to certain lengths to make sure that they don't get sued. And occasionally, I've bumped up against those. They wouldn't allow me to describe Martin Durkin, who's the documentary maker behind the great global warming swindle. They wouldn't allow me to describe him as a liar, despite the fact that throughout his entire filmmaking career, he has shown himself to be a liar and been found out for being a liar. An accusation which he would level at Al Gore, you know. So I wasn't really clear why the BBC got so kind of uppity about the use of the word liar, which he certainly is. So, you know, there's that. And I don't know, in terms of self-censorship, I mean, yeah, I suppose you do, simply because on all of the programmes that I make, with the exception of one that I did a while ago, they're all edited. So it doesn't, you know, I could sit there and say, you know, whatever, say he's a liar and a murderer and a paedophile. It wouldn't make the edit. So, you know, there is a level of censorship. And actually, I think that self-censorship is incredibly important. Very, very important. You know, you must pay attention to the things that you say. But that's about being responsible rather than crashing over libel issues, you know.
So, well, tonight is, you know, it's a sold-out event. Mm. And do you think events like this raise the issues of the libel laws to the wider public? I mean, do you think it's becoming more something that concerns more people than obvious people like newspapers, scientists and performers?
I hope so. I mean, there's always, you know, any kind of gig like this, there's always a decent split of people interested in the issue and people going, oh, I like those comedians or whoever, and they turn up. But they're the better ones. They're more interesting, I mean, to me, because the rest are already sold on the idea. They didn't need to come here, you know, and that's fine, it's good for them to wave a flag, but it's more interesting. But also, I was talking to Robin Ince, who's, you know, put a lot of this together, about the fact I'm quite conflicted over this particular issue, because I see people in the press who I would like to see silenced. Mm. You know, I really would. I see some of the comment writers in the British press writing stuff that so incenses me, and I believe to be so dishonest, and I think they're writing knowing that it's dishonest, that I would love to see them silenced. So for me, I'm a bit conflicted, other than, you know, when you look at the history of how this libel law as it stands has been used, it actually hasn't affected the people that I would kind of like to see silenced, or at least vigorously challenged with some sort of, with an outcome that might cost them their job and some money. You know, it's people like Simon.
Well, yeah, it seems like when we talk about libel reform, we're not just looking for people to get a free pass to say whatever they want, but to make the courts more amenable to appropriately suing the people who are actually lying. Mm. And I know that you know, speaking as an American coming over here and being suddenly exposed to things like the Daily Mail, to see some of the things that get printed that I can read and immediately know are just wrong, and nothing happens to them, and yet Simon says something that's quite appropriate, but gets sued. So,
I mean, also there's, you know, when the case first came up, and it was described to me as a, you know, as a travesty and potentially a tragedy, I thought, well, no, this will be great, won't it? Because they're now going to have to prove that they're not. I mean, prove properly, you know, scientifically show that what they do and all the things, all the questions that are raised about this kind of practice about, well, you know, you need to enter into the same level of clinical trials as everybody else. I thought, oh, cool, that'll be the terms upon which this is tried then. Not the case. That at no point do the chiropractors, right?
Yeah.
I always get muddled between that and chiropodists, and I just didn't want to say the wrong one. You know, the foot people.
Libel them; they're hardcore.
I know. Yeah, they will come after you with little filing instruments. You know, I thought, well, that's great. You know, they will have to now prove, but. It's kind of amazing that that's not even part of what any of this discussion is about. At no point are they going to have to prove what they do has any validity anywhere. That seems pretty bizarre. You know, because I suppose I look at most of these things from a selfish point of view, and I think, well, you know, if someone said something about me that I thought wasn't true, I'd be interested in showing that it wasn't the case. Not personally interested in exploiting a set of laws that are just bullshit. You know, and desperately need to be reformed. And anyone who looks at them, regardless of which side of an issue they fall on, could look at them and say, oh, these need to be reformed. I'd much rather prove my thing if I thought it was worth anything than go through that process. But, you know, that's the difference between me and some possibly, probably, definitely lying quacks.
Well, on that note, we're asking people to help us out because we want to make sure everybody at the event tonight really agrees that libel reform needs to happen. And so to do that, we're asking everyone to libel one another. So could you do us a favor and just libel maybe one of the other speakers on the bill?
I'd like to. I mean, it's difficult sometimes to libel people, you know, I mean, to say something that I suspect isn't true. I mean, Robin Ince, for example, who invited me to do this show, I happen to know is a gay Catholic, but that's not libel. It's just stuff that people don't know about Robin, so it's not actually libel. I mean, I think he might be interested in suing me over that because he wouldn't want people to know that he is a very predatory homosexual Catholic. I won't say any more about the ways in which he's predatory, but you know, he is, he knows it, we know it. And that's the fact. And, you know, also that Simon Singh actually sells snake oil. And I don't just mean, you know, figuratively snake oil. Simon Singh, you can buy from the back of his car of a weekend snake oil that he gets from snakes himself. And I know this to be true. I've seen Simon Singh do it. All this stuff about, oh, Simon Singh hasn't got enough money to fight the chiropodists. Right? Not true. Simon Singh has made over £1 million already this year. Where are we? March?
Yeah.
From the sale of snake oil from snakes he's milked himself.
Interesting.
Tim Minchin is a common thief.
I think everyone knows that, but yes.
Well, yeah, that was definitely not libelous.
Well, we'll see if they stick to their guns and sue you or not.
Good luck to them. Those are facts, people. Those are the facts.
Thank you very much.
Sigh.
Well, we've been joined by Tracy Brown of Centre About Science, who Little Iceland listeners will be familiar with. Tracy, tell us why we're here tonight.
Well, we're here to mark a real high point in the campaign for libel reform. And it's kind of a crucial point, really, because what we've got now is 40,000 people signed up to change the law. And we have a huge outpouring of frustration that we have this law that belongs back in feudal times and is not just not made for the print era, it's not certainly not made for an era of communication in a democracy across the internet and all other forms. So people have really come together, and I think they've come together around a lot of publicity, not just for the case that people will be aware of, Simon Singh being sued by the British Chiropractic Association, but then through that, the cases that have also come to prominence, the cardiologist Peter Wilmshurst, The guy we brought over from Sweden this week talking about his research into lie detectors that he was unable to publish and the journal had to pull down because of threats against the journal by the company. So all of this is coming to light, and the chill factor, the fact that everybody now thinks really hard about whether or not to take the risk of putting up their critical thoughts, and that really, as a democracy, we're becoming poorer as a result of that. So that's what tonight marks. It's a frustration, but it's also a coming together of a lot of the people who've been involved in that and the support for the campaign. What's ahead of us is a really tough time. We've got 6 weeks before an election in the UK, and this is something that we think should be a major part of people's civil liberties agenda and something that they look at in their manifesto. So although it's a fantastic celebration at one level, it's also a recognition that we need to really guard up our loins for the challenges ahead.
Well, there's actually representatives of all the political parties here. Well, not all of them.
Yes, the
BNP didn't send anyone, did they?
They didn't. They didn't have much to say on the subject. But we do have tonight representatives from the Liberal Democrats who have already made a commitment to libel reform for the future, and we're hoping we'll see something in the manifesto. We've also got Peter Bottomley from the Conservatives here and Paul Farrelly from the Labour Party. They will be speaking together with Peter Wilmshurst, the cardiologist, who's currently being sued by an American device manufacturer. So they're going to be talking about why this really matters and their own commitment as a cross-party group of MPs to seeing reform in all of their parties. This is a cross-party issue.
Have you found it difficult to reach across the aisle and get all those parties on board?
No, not really. I think what we found, to some extent, I think there's always a problem in a pre-election period that people are looking for the massive vote winners, what they see as the massive vote winners. And for the different parties, they're looking at policies to do with families and pensions and these kinds of things. And so a lot of people have said to me, well, you know, is this really a big issue? Well, the key thing about understanding the laws around free speech is to understand that this isn't an issue that sits alongside all those other things about human rights and, well, you know, how companies behave, how people in public office behave and all those things. It's not something that sits alongside them. It's something that's a precursor to all those things, that we need it in order to actually decide what matters to us as a society. So in many ways, going into an election, now is the time more than ever when we need to actually look at the rights that we have as citizens and whether we're able to have the discussions we need to have about medicine, science, academic research, and even just our critical views about anything that people are up to in society.
Well, just to finish off, Tracy, we're asking everybody that we interview to tell us something interesting or some gossip or something about one of the other acts that are on tonight. So, is there anything interesting that you'd like to share with us?
I'm not sure if I should share this, but I was in the dressing room earlier when Tim Minchin arrived, and I was rather surprised to see him getting excited looking at pictures of naked sheep. I'm not sure that I should share that, but yes.
Well, thank you very much, Tracy.
You're welcome.
So we're joined now by Richard Wiseman. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
How are you tonight?
I've got a very sore throat, actually. A really sore throat.
That's a lie, actually.
Yes, it's a lie. Yes, I'm fine. I'm very well, actually. Yeah, I've been on a very long bus ride to get here. It was a 4.5-hour bus ride, but it's worth it. It's worth it, yeah.
Well, why don't you tell us why we're here?
Why are we here?
Why?
Well,
not philosophically.
I was going to say that's not a lot.
Not on the wider, yeah. Not like, you know, not why are we here, why are we alive, or why are we sat in this room?
We know that usually, but, you know, you don't deal with those sort of questions. Yeah. You're more about, you know,
the mid range. Why are we here in this theatre tonight?
Why do we laugh at monkeys on roller skates as opposed to why are we here?
We can talk about that one next, though.
In what sense is this an interview? Well, in what sense is this an interview versus you two just saying things at me and then holding the microphones in a way that I can't actually respond?
I'm sorry. Did you have something you wanted to say?
I do actually deal with the bigger philosophical... It's not but monkeys on roller skates. I'm quite offended by that, actually. I deal with a lot of the bigger philosophical issues. Isn't it skateboards? They go on skateboards as well as roller skates. Why? You know, that's a question that a lot of us are posing. Anyway, so why are we here? We're here to impart support to Simon, who's a very good friend of mine. We go back a long way. And he's got himself into a little bit of a tricky situation because he criticised some people. He claimed that they could do something. And he said they couldn't do it when they claimed that they could. And so he's in a tricky situation. And we're here to support him financially. Well, not me personally, financially. I make that quite clear if anyone's listening to this, particularly Simon. He's not getting a penny.
He writes me, it's a bit sad actually, every week, a different begging letter. I know it's him. I know it's him. He signs them off differently, but I know it's him. It's sad. It's sad that it's come down to that with him.
You skipped to the end when we were going to ask you to libel someone.
Hold on, I haven't even started on that. How long have I got? So now we're here, and lots of people have turned up. Apparently there's 20 in the stalls, and there's another 10 in the balcony. So that's 30 people already. And they're here to have a good evening. We're going to be laughing. We're going to be thinking a little bit. They've got some proper philosophical thinkers on, and not just myself. I've got a couple of videos of monkeys on roller skates, and that's pretty much the evening.
And to get back to the why we're here part, it is about more than just Simon, I think. It's also a larger issue.
Is it about me as well? Tell me it's not about me. This isn't for my benefit, is it? I haven't done anything.
There's a man outside waiting with an envelope to put into your hand.
Richard, this is an intervention. We're all concerned about you.
Really? That's very kind.
You didn't notice that these weren't actually on?
No. It's the whole thing's a role-playing thing. That's very, very kind. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us how you feel about libel reform in a more general context.
I think it should be reformed because there's not enough of it. That's what I think. You know, you go out nowadays, you say something about someone, suddenly there's a writ. Where if we can reform it, if we can get more libel out there, more slander, then it's just going to be a lot more fun.
Mm. Well, why don't you get us started then?
Well, that's what I'll be doing this evening. I don't want to spoil the surprise for everyone, but I'm doing 15 minutes. I'm going around each member of the audience individually and just libeling each one.
And with only 30 people in the audience, you've got a good 30 seconds to spend on...
It's not all A material, but there's something there. I will say, the other performers, they're all shit, okay? Except for me. That's libel number one. Although, actually, I don't know whether the truth... Is that a defence against libel? I'm a bit confused about that one.
It is, apparently.
I'm easy on that one, so I'm scot-free. So that's fine. And it's in the public interest, I believe. I don't know if that's a defence. I don't think it is actually reliable in this country.
Well, that part has to be true, actually. It has to actually be in the public interest.
It is in the public interest to say all these people are shit.
Yeah, because you don't want people going and paying to go and see that.
Precisely.
Further down the line.
Precisely. And also, there's several authors here. There's Ben, there's Brian, and there's of course Simon. I'm not saying all of their books were written by me. Okay. I'm not saying that I wrote every single word of Bad Science, okay, and Fermat's Last Theorem. I'm not saying that, because libel laws prevent me from saying it. Yet, you look at the acknowledgements in those books, I'm not mentioned. I am airbrushed out of history, and I want to be on the cover of those books, I want to be named, I want to be on the Amazon, and more importantly, I actually want some of the royalties.
And you don't think that airbrushing has anything to do with your looks?
You see, if it bends, it's funny. If it breaks, it isn't. Rebecca, it just broke.
Do you need a hug?
Fuck you.
Thank you, Richard.
Richard, thank you for speaking to us.
Fuck a lot of you.
We are joined now by Brian Cox. Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Hello.
Now, we're here at the libel gig. Why don't you tell us all about your feelings on libel reform?
Well, it cannot be libelous to use the best knowledge we have of nature to criticise or make decisions about medical procedures or, for that matter, about, well, anything at all. I mean, I, as a scientist, I know that nature is out there, right? There is a correct answer to things. I mean, we could get into a lot of philosophy here about science, but basically, science is the body of evidence that's been peer-reviewed that is the best view we can get to as a community, as a civilization, about particular questions, like whether it be climate change or whether it be homeopathy, and for that to be closed off, for that body of peer-reviewed evidence not to be allowed to be used to criticise anything at all is idiotic in the extreme.
And you feel that English libel laws as they currently stand hamper that?
Well, yeah, because I don't think that courts can be, the way that libel laws are drafted at the moment, courts can't be expected to essentially run a parallel peer review system, which is what it seems to me is asked of them. So it's not the court's fault. It seems to be that the structure is built such that you can't bring the peer-reviewed, settled view of the scientific community to bear on questions such as, should homeopathy be used on the NHS? Is there evidence for that? Are chiropractors well qualified to treat children's ailments? There are answers to those things, and for any system that doesn't allow you to use that evidence to criticise is ridiculous.
Do you think, you've just taken a sort of foray into radio as well, you did the Infinite Monkey Cage with Robin, and so we were talking to other earlier guests about how those sort of things cross over. Obviously the Simon Singh thing is the main focus of why we're here, but clearly there's a sort of censorious atmosphere in the world of like TV and radio as well, and do you think that's sort of impacted?
I must admit, probably to my immense danger, I haven't noticed, but unfortunately for me, everything I've done really has not been live. So I do say all sorts of things that are presumably libelous, and I'll let somebody else sort it out later, because I don't have that correcting mechanism. I genuinely think that there's a see, I used the word correct earlier. You've got to be careful in science. Nothing's ever right, but science is very good at showing that things are wrong. So the weight of the peer-reviewed evidence can show that things are wrong, that things don't work. Mm. And I have no problem at all in saying that. So, if I do say it on the radio, then presumably people think it's libelous, people take it out.
Unless it's us that are interviewing you, in which case we don't know anything.
Presumably I could libel myself. Is that the right way around?
Can you libel yourself?
You could libel somebody else. Yes, no, I can't libel. I could libel myself. I should try that and see myself.
Why don't you give it a go?
I do not have a degree. I bought it from the University of the University of the Web. I was going to say then like someone, and then like that woman. Libel. You know that woman? Yeah.
Sorry. Really?
You know that woman? You know the one?
Well, Ben Goldbeck did the same thing.
Did he? Yeah.
Definitely.
Did you want to libel anyone else while we're here?
I want to libel Simon Singh, because he definitely... he hasn't written any of his books. They're all stolen. He knows nothing. The book he wrote about the Big Bang, it looked like he had some kind of scientific education. And I know, because he says that he got a PhD in particle physics, right? And he says that he worked, I think where I worked, in Hamburg. No one remembers him there. There's no sign of him. There's no record of him. It's all completely fabricated. The guy knows absolutely nothing.
That's very interesting, because someone else tonight has made a very similar accusation about
well,
the provenance of Simon's books.
There is no smoke without fire, right? He knows nothing. I'm going straight to the press. For people like me, who are real scientists, right? Who really got a PhD and write real science books. He's a disgrace. He's an absolute disgrace.
Well, thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you.
So we've been joined by Mr. Ben Goldacre, who I'm sure our listeners will be more than familiar with. Ben, why are you here tonight?
Well, I think even if I hadn't been sued, I would come to support those who have. But for 19 months, about up until a year ago, I was being sued by a German vitamin pill millionaire entrepreneur called Matthias Rath, because I'd written sort of critically, I think pretty reasonably, about the fact that he'd wandered into South Africa and started taking out full-page adverts saying antiretroviral medication, which is, of course, life-saving, will kill you. It's a conspiracy by the pharmaceutical industry. And the answer to the AIDS epidemic is here. And, of course, the answer to the AIDS epidemic, according to Matthias Rath, was vitamin pills. And he took these ideas very much to the right place. South Africa at the time, of course, was headed by a man called President Thabo Mbeki, who is an AIDS denialist. And Matthias Rath's one-time right-hand man, Anthony Brunk, boasts that he can take the credit for introducing Thabo Mbeki to the central tenets of AIDS denialism. And
that is some boast.
That's really something to be proud of. And so between the sort of 2000 and 2007... the South African government variously claimed that HIV is not the cause of AIDS, that antiretroviral medication doesn't help AIDS, in fact it makes it worse. They refused to roll out antiretroviral drugs, they refused to accept gifts of those drugs, and they had a health minister called Manto Shabalala Umsimang, whose catchphrase was, "We are what we eat," which is eerily familiar. And she would go on television and explain that sweet African potato and garlic are better for treating AIDS than antiretroviral medication. So, you know, if you were going to walk into a situation that fucked up, and more than that, if you were going to walk into a situation that was that messed up, but also where 300,000 people are dying every year of AIDS in South Africa, that's one every 2 minutes, that's 800 people every day dying of AIDS, where 25% of the population is HIV positive, half of all pregnant women, 1.2 million AIDS orphans so far. If you were going to walk into a situation like that, you'd make very, very, very sure indeed that what you were selling or what you were promoting or what you were recommending or advising or talking about in your full-page adverts in national newspapers was very well evidenced and straight down the line. And in Matthias Rath's case, that was fairly obviously not true.
Nonetheless, you still ended up being sued.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we were hanging out during this period, and you know, it took up a lot of my time. It took 19 months to resolve the case, and even more ridiculously than that, the Guardian's costs in total were £535,000. We got £220,000 out of Matthias Rath instantly, and in total, eventually, we only got £365,000 awarded. So that means that the cost of winning is 19 months of weekends and evenings and £170,000, which is roughly the same as the average price of a home in the UK. That's the price of successfully defending yourself. I mean, you know, I'm not a comedian, but that is laughable.
And in addition to the time and the money you've invested, there were other results to his suit. For instance, you had a book coming out at about the time that he sued, and that was impacted, right?
Yeah, I couldn't write about him in the book. You know, everybody gets very nervous and very twitchy around libel, because even if you are successful, you lose a home's worth of money. And, you know, I was very lucky to have The Guardian, but, I mean, Peter Wilmshurst, the cardiologist from up north, I mean, firstly, I'm incredibly moved, actually, that we've got a consultant cardiologist from up north who's being sued and defending himself out of his own pocket, and we've got him on a West End stage. I mean, if that's not extraordinary, I don't know what is. But that poor guy, you know, stands alone. And is he in his 50s? You know, he'll lose his house, and he's got a wife and children. And, you know, this is kind of a game played by big people with big money, and it's using laws that are made and used by politicians who tend to be kind of, you know, big people with big money. And I think there's a really serious empathy failure here when nobody will stand up and say, what are we going to do about a consultant cardiologist who worked in good faith on a clinical trial, who's being sued simply for standing up and explaining some of the problems in the results of a trial that will be used to help people make decisions about which treatments to give their patients. I mean, that seems just so insane to me. It defies belief. You know, you cannot possibly defend a set of laws that have that result.
So without asking you to now, in your head, completely reform Britain's libel laws, bearing in mind the, you know, the libel reform campaign that's going on, if these changes come to pass, how do you think your case might have panned out differently, you know, if this happened a couple of years down the line?
I don't know how laws would realistically be changed. You know, I think defining laws is a very difficult business because, I mean, I'm not a legal or moral philosopher, but, you know, there are a lot of things in the world where we've got a general sense of what's right or wrong, but if you actually start to try and write out rules of you know, perfect flowcharts of how to determine right from wrong, it actually gets very, very difficult. So you'd expect some rough edges. That said, there's no possible way that you could say that the kind of adjudications that we see under current libel law are in any way a small number of rough edges. I think in some respects, one thing you could do is abolish libel laws altogether, use the laws that fill in some of the gaps, like, for example, the Data Protection Act or malicious falsehood, which do actually cover a fair amount of that stuff. It's interesting, in fact, that people use different laws depending on what they're used to. So celebrities or politicians will tend to use libel or malicious falsehood rarely, whereas civil servants, if they feel that they've been misrepresented on, for example, it comes up occasionally on What Do They Know, the FOI site, I think, and a couple of other places. You find civil servants using the Data Protection Act because they say, you're storing incorrect information about me and that's wrong and I'd like this information that's about me corrected. You know, I think you could just see how you run along with those two laws, and if there are any obvious gaps, then you could fill them in. But, I don't know, if somebody makes stuff up about you and they're in a position where they've got quite a big loud hailer so that they can broadcast it widely, and when you go to them and you say, you know, that is really wrong, and they don't do anything to correct it, then I think, you know, that's a reasonable situation for some kind of hearing, ideally a pretty brief and quick one, to resolve it. But the palaver that you see with libel laws today, particularly around costs, is foul. And, you know, it's maintained as much by lawyers as it is by the wealthy. It's unimaginable to see, you know, institutions don't sign their own death warrant. You don't get institutions abolishing the problem which they exist to solve.
Well, on the subject of making things up about people, have you heard anything interesting, or have you got anything interesting you'd like to share with us about some of the other people that are on the bill tonight?
Yeah, Tim Minchin has got, like, a really tiny cock, but I don't mean that as crude abuse, because crude abuse isn't libelous. But I mean, his cock is so small it actually impacts negatively on his ability to work. And I know that by saying that, I'll be costing him revenue, because obviously a lot of his reputation as a male sex worker relies on his... He's not just sort of mistaken in the comments that he makes about how long and how sort of funny and little and narrow his cock is. He actually knows how small it is and willfully deceives people, so that's pretty bad.
Happily even, should we say.
Yeah, happily deceiving people. Happily promotes bogus stories about the length and girth of his own cock. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Tim's tiny cock, that's a fact. And I'm looking forward, if he is unwise enough to pursue this through the British legal system, to the day when I stand alongside Justice Eadie and Tim has to take his trousers down for the ultimate legal denouement.
Ben, thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thank you, Ben. Joining us now is Dara O'Brien. Dara, thanks for sitting down with us.
It's a pleasure. It's an absolute delight, yes, in this rarefied environment where the same posse of people who turn up at all these nerd gigs seem to be appearing. It's actually getting a little bit comfortable now at this stage. I think it's probably time that we tore ourselves apart and expose the rifts that exist. Yeah, I think so, actually. I think what should happen is that we should all, whether it's me or, you know, Minchin or Goldacre or Singh, should all desperately struggle, try to be the one with the high ground. And then it should just rip itself apart in a series of one-upmanships.
Or just a drunken fist fight or something.
Yeah, but like an ideological drunken fist fight where we all feel that we've given more to the cause. Now, I haven't given anything really to the cause. I do the odd gag here and there. So I don't know what I'm going to do to Trump. I'm involved in a massively ruinous libel case. Two of them can do that. Minchin isn't wearing shoes, so he's already got that angle. So it's difficult to know where I'm going to come in.
I believe you are the only one wearing a velvet jacket.
I am, because I'm in show business. And when you're working in show business, it is, as the name implies, the business of show. So people, it's still a stage out there, there's still lights, microphones, you know, you still got to put on a, you know, the ordinary public would like to think that those of us who live in the gilded cage will occasionally slip on a bit of velvet and just make an effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've mentioned a couple of times in earlier interviews that although we're here tonight the issue was the Simon Singh case, which is where this all started, really. Yes. But, of course, all of this stuff overflows into show business as well. So, I mean, do you find, you know, when you're writing material, do you find yourself self-censoring because of these sort of issues?
No, you generally don't, because making very, very specific allegations. No one has yet, as far as I remember, I think Alexei Sayle said something, but there have been very, very few libel cases taken against a comedian. I think people regard as being, in Britain anyway, bad form. and show that, you know, you can call me whatever you want, but don't say I haven't got a sense of humour. So we actually have been given a pretty free run of it so far. I mean, I think if you do something substantive like he did, point out something that, you know, people have been trading off, then yeah, perhaps. But like, no, I've you know, the Gillian McKeith routine, you know, that went out in a number of different formats and fonts, and all the time I kept hearing about her husband was a libel lawyer. So you kind of go, well, that's surely, if you know, if we haven't heard by now, then no. So you don't. I mean, you, there's so many other things you're worried about. Is it funny? Will the audience like it? Will they get it? Will they understand? All these kind of things. You know, you're kind of going, it's rarely been an issue with somebody.
But what about, I mean, say for something like Mock the Week, for instance. I mean, clearly, you know, something that's going out on the television, there must be, and you know, there has been a chilling effect over the BBC over the last.
Well, the chilling effect. The chilling effect on the BBC wasn't necessarily to do with libel, was to do with them. Ross and Brand and the Daily Mail and those kind of campaigns, but that does have an effect. But there are always lawyers at shows like ours. I mean, we do them. We don't do them live for a reason. When stuff is broadcast like that, I think people have less of a sense of humour about it. And but there's always been a disclaimer: don't mention brand names or products and stuff. That's always existed. So it's not like that. You know, it would be. I'm not sure necessarily. Listen, nobody's here saying that there shouldn't be a libel law. Nobody's saying that you shouldn't be able to say what you want, you know, that you should have completely carte blanche to insult people in whatever way you want. We're just saying that the ruinous cost of it as, you know, led to it becoming a tool for bullying.
And you say that people don't generally go after comedians, but didn't you recently run afoul of some blasphemy?
Oh, yeah, that's sweet, actually, because I only a few days ago found that I'd been cleared of blasphemy in Ireland because I insulted a tree stump. That apparently represents the Virgin Mary. That was, you know, a huge relief to myself and my family who'd been living under the yoke of perhaps not getting into heaven, because I went on television and pointed out that it actually looked like a collection of isobars, is what I said. It looked like a bun, I said.
Did you apologise to the tree stump?
No, I haven't. And it wasn't, you know, the tree stump's feelings aren't known on this. The case was taken on its behalf. By somebody said that I'd shown a tremendous lack of understanding of the Second Coming. Literally, this was his argument, that I hadn't properly respected the second arrival of Jesus and the signs that had been left around. Mm. And it'd be like, he said, as if I'd describe Garden of Gethsemane as being a silly old park. That was the actual words he said. It was something I now insist on doing.
I mean, it's famous that the swings were rubbish.
Well, it was a very poor park, the Garden of Gethsemane. For one thing, you'd bring your children there to play, and there'd be three men hanging off crosses, like, and it just kind of ruined the atmosphere.
It's kind of a downer.
It is. You know the way when you go into a public park and there's some teenagers, you know, maybe drinking cider or something, or maybe people, you know, there's a fire, you know, where they'd be all gathered around, and you know, and it looks like scruffy. These are three guys who took 3 days to die. That's not, you know, that a park.
Health and safety would never allow that sort of thing to happen.
That's not a happy place to be. What's wrong with them?
Now, in Ireland, the blasphemy laws have recently been big news. How do you feel about them?
I have a gamble at the moment with a well-known Irish chanteuse. That the first one to get done under blasphemy would buy the other a bag of chips. That is how I'm regarding it. I am regarding it as a prize, a €25,000 fine for blasphemy in Ireland. At some stage, I'm hoping that it will be presented to me mid-show by the police, who will come out with a giant rubber check like Telethon. And the point, I don't actually have a blasphemous routine. I don't have a thing that I want to do. But there is a very silly ending to my show, this tour. But there's an even sillier version, because in Ireland, not only do I do the silly thing, but then I blaspheme during the silly thing. And you're kind of going, well, how can I make this more ridiculous? How can I, you know, I can't dance around and blaspheme any more than I already am. It's patently ludicrous. But most Irish people don't even know it's there. And no one asked for it, but it's great. So.
Well, I certainly hope you win the bag of chips.
Thank you very much. I'm really, really looking forward to the 25,000. I don't know what I'll spend it on. Oh, we'll have a holiday first, and then we'll see what we're going to do.
Dara, to finish off, we've been inviting everybody to libel somebody else that's on the bill, just to get into the spirit of the evening. So,
Ed Byrne killed a man once with a pool cue, and it was a bar fight. That he got into over, you know, and it was over nothing. And the guy wasn't even the guy who's playing. It was just another guy was looking at him, and Ed was losing, and Ed went, what? And the guy said, nothing, I'm here with my wife. And so Ed beat him to death. And we don't go on about it a lot, you know. But and the guy, you know, he didn't need this. He's a nice guy, like. But so he did that. Ben Golicker disposed of the body. He buried it in lime, and then Tim Minchin danced on the grave barefoot, and composed a beat poem about the whole incident.
It sounds like this must have been at a previous nerd get together.
It was either the Amazing Meeting or one of Nerd Stocks. Well, you know when we get together. You know when the nerds get together and it kind of kicks off, and before you know it, there's a dead guy, and then there's a hooker crying, and then there was a lot of coke, and it was a hell of a night. You know, it was, you know, for a Tuesday, it really kicked off.
Well, I can't wait to see what this night brings. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Dara. Thanks, Dara.
So joining us now is Ariane Shireen. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very well.
You've just come off stage at the big libel gig. How did it go?
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was fantastic.
What was your act?
I sung a song. I did a Simon sing-along. So we all sung a song about Simon Singh.
Could you say that three more times faster?
And it was great. Everybody sang along in tune, which was brilliant. And it was really, really exciting, and I feel really happy. It's really nice to be a part of it with so many great performers.
Is there any chance we could hear a little snippet of the song?
Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, please.
You've come in constantly got a guitar.
Have a guitar.
And do you have the words written on your... Yes,
they are.
The words written up your arm.
I thought you'd think it was like a cool tattoo or something.
Yeah. Pretend it's religious, and it always gives people a pass.
Okay. I will... Shall I sing the first verse and chorus?
Please do.
Okay. I don't believe all the stuff in the Bible, but at least God won't come down and sue me for libel. I don't believe that if I call God bogus, he'd get cross and send down a big plague of locusts. But it's just a shame we can't say the same about the BCA. So I'm gonna sing about Simon Singh, but he's not the Pope, so I won't kiss his ring. He fights for what's right, though his hair's wrong, so we'll spend tonight in a Simon Singh song.
That was wonderful.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
But, I mean, did I just hear you lambast the Singh hairdo?
I know, that's sacred. There, you got your libel right there. You want me to say something libelous? Simon's hair looks like a pineapple.
Actually, at TAM, I have a great picture of him. He's backstage, and it was, they had the projector set up still, but it was just showing a blank white screen. And so he put his head in front of it, and it looked like a giant pineapple. It was quite remarkable.
I think that is the look that he's going for, and he pulls it off with panache.
He's the scientific pineapple.
He's fantastic. So
we have been asking all our previous interviewees to say something libelous about their co-stars.
And pineapple hair doesn't quite...
Doesn't cut it.
Truth doesn't count for libel, does it?
Oh, God.
Is this the fear of libel that's striking you dumb?
No, it's the fear of running into any of these people. My mind's just going. My mind's gone full of dead people and horses. And
for
dead
you?
Horses. And yeah, go ahead.
Go Goldacre.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's like, it's so easy.
He's the easiest, is he? Ben Goldacre. Do you know what? This is like anything that I'm thinking that's coming into my head. I'm thinking that it could be quite plausible. So that's why it's...
Why don't you try one of those? Because, you know...
Ben Goldacre likes to club small puppies over the head with a large halibut stuffed with the corpses of small hamsters. Is that okay?
It's brilliant. You took it someplace I never dreamt it would go.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Not at all.
Thanks, Ariane. We're joined by Ed Byrne. Ed, thanks for speaking to us.
Thank you very much. I'm glad the sirens just started turning themselves up just as we began.
There's been sirens going past constantly, actually, haven't they? We're obviously in a very dodgy part of London.
It's because we're hardcore.
Why are we here tonight, Ed?
Because there's clearly, this is the safest place to be, considering the sound of the sirens outside. In here, it seems the safest place. Out there is bad.
Why are we here? Slightly wider.
Not open things right up. Get Ari and Shireen up here and ask her why she's here. She'll say, for no reason, it's just all random chance. Which it is. Anyway, we are here because we're here for this big libel gig, basically, trying to raise awareness and money to get the law changed. And you, screw you, copper! Just because I said law. Trying to get the law changed so that, basically, the libel laws in this country are unfair compared to the rest of Europe.
And how did you get involved in the cause?
Very simple. I was just asked. That was about the size of it. I was asked by Robin Ince, would I get on board? And everyone else that's on this bill, I follow on Twitter. And I so desperately want their respect. And I want to be considered one of the nerdy comics. Because even with the glasses, people still think of me as a bit too much of a man about town. But really, I'm a nerd. I'm trying to turn up my nerd image. You can't see, but I'm wearing a Battlestar Galactica t-shirt, folks. I know you can't tell that on the radio. Well, you probably can, by the sound of my voice, that I'm the kind of person who would.
He's lying in a Nike shirt.
We were just talking before about how the nerd comedy circuit is actually quite a good racket these days. So you should, it's definitely something that you should get involved in.
Yeah. It's, and with the way the internet has revolutionised communication. Nerds are far more powerful than they ever used to be. And it's good to be on the side of the nerd nowadays.
So on the subject of libel law and libel reform, have you personally ever felt that you might be at risk of libel lawsuits or self-censored yourself in that respect?
Gosh, I don't know that I have. But I have noticed... there was one thing that really annoyed me one time. I was watching footage of myself on television just to see how it had been edited. I was doing a show at the Comedy Store, live at the Comedy Store for TV. And one of the jokes that I had, I mentioned Reverend Stephen Green, the head of Christian Voice. I said, they say Reverend Stephen Green, which is a bit like saying Dr. Gillian McKeith. And... that got cut out. That line was cut out. And that, I am assuming the reason for that being cut out, because it's a very short, quick line. It's clean. There's no swearing in it. You wouldn't have cut it for time because it's a very short joke. And the only thing it could have been cut for is you would have thought, what if Gillian McKeith sues? Even though Gillian McKeith had been stripped of the word, doctor. I guess because Reverend Stephen Green is allowed to call himself Reverend, having started his own church. So that was one thing that really annoyed me.
That's the second time that Dr. Gillian McKeith has come up during our interviews, which is quite remarkable considering we've only done six interviews.
Yeah, you might get tired of hearing that name over the course of the evening.
No, never. It's just amazing to me that it wasn't Ben Goldacre that brought it up, because that's how I learned about her, as like Crazy Poo Lady, I think is what he calls her.
Right. Was the other person who mentioned her Darrow Breen?
He certainly was.
Hey,
was.
I know him so well.
Yeah, and he also mentioned that her husband is a libel lawyer or something, which is possibly the reason why people are... tread lightly around her.
I see. That is very interesting. That may be the most interesting thing I have heard about Gillian McKeith.
And I can tell you that she and her husband on her behalf has issued several libel lawsuits against many parties, or threats of libel lawsuits against many parties to shut them up.
So. Yeah. I think that's the one thing that I wasn't even fully aware of until getting involved in this show, is the level by which, even if you're right, that because of having to pay your own costs if somebody takes you to court, it's ludicrous, isn't it?
So on that topic, we've been asking each of the people we've sat down with to comment upon one of the other speakers, or multiple other speakers tonight, in the hopes that maybe you would libel them.
Sure. There's nothing really libelous, because you'd have to make something up. I could actually tell you something true, which is that Darrow Breen once killed a man with a pool cue. And we have a kind of a joke that he, you know, likes to pretend it was me, but he did it.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, yeah. It was you'd think he'd be able to just do it with his bare hands, but no, he had to be a chicken about it. Even that, he had to be a chicken about it. He had to take a weapon. The guy was unarmed. All the guy said was, "Mock the Week isn't as good as Have I Got News for You," and Dara went crazy.
That's incredible. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Not at all. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed. We're talking to Shappy Horse Andy. Shappy, thank you very much for...
Course Andy's better than Horse Andy.
Okay. No, that's because probably true. Should I start again?
Well, no, it just says something really odd about what my ancestors might have done for a living. I'd rather that they were cause rather than horse.
What, as in the Irish pop combo?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
So then, we're talking to Shappy Course Andy. Shappy, thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure.
So, why are you here tonight?
Well, they have a lot of free suites backstage, Quality Street celebrations, you name it, they've got it. Pretty much all it takes for me to do a gig these days. I would do a gig for the BNP if they provided some kind of confectionery for free backstage. No, obviously I'm kidding. I'm doing this gig. I met Simon Singh at one of Robin Ince's Nine Carols for Godless People gigs. And I was aware of him, obviously, before. So he was a bit of a science celebrity and aware of the case against him. And it's a real privilege to be asked to do this gig in support of Simon, really, and also just to really underline the craziness of our libel laws, which is I don't think enough people think about the libel laws. They really don't. We kind of convince ourselves that we live in a free society because of whatever else other liberties we have, and we don't look close enough at what can actually happen if you challenge stuff.
And for you, was it Simon's case that brought the problem to your attention, the problem of the libel laws in England?
Not particularly. Yes, obviously, but also other things. You know, I was always aware that we weren't quite as free as we like to think we are with them, but Simon's case is really brought the issue to the fore.
Is it something you've encountered yourself, though, in your career?
No.
and you've never felt that you needed to self-censor at all to avoid lawsuits?
Oh, no, not to... You self-censor, anyway, as a comedian, just because... You do, as a human being, you do. When you're at a dinner party, you don't always just blurt out everything that comes into your head. The only time you're aware of being sued is if you're on a television programme or any kind of broadcasting thing, and it's not even you that's going to be sued. It's going to be the company that's going to be sued. So I think it's incredibly brave of people like Simon who do sort of put themselves out there. And the experience I have in it is my father, who was the one that got into trouble with both libel laws, not in this country, but in Iran, and obviously worse trouble with the Islamic Republic of Iran, which are a weird organisation to talk about after 3.5 cans of beer. I feel like they're outside judging me, going, "She's slurring the bitch." So if any of the Islamic Republic are listening, I'm not.
There are a big part of our audience.
Yeah, I've heard, actually. I've heard that they do like, index on censorship. Is it for index on censorship? Is
Little Adams.
Yes, I've heard they're a big fan of Little Atoms. So it's weird because I feel like by proxy I put myself out there. All it is with me, I have a father who has gone into trouble and has been very brave, although he won't think of it as brave. People like Simon and people like my father or anyone who speaks their mind and fights what they believe in, they don't regard themselves as brave. They can't not do what they do. And so the very least... I can do, we can do, is support them. Good luck. We're right behind you.
And I'm not sure how much you want to go into, but is there a quick version of your father's story?
Very quick version is that he was supporter of the Iranian Revolution, and at the time in Iran, the left supported the Ayatollahs because they thought it was the only alternative. And that's unfortunately, sorry, I want to go on a bit of a rant here. Unfortunately, that's the mistake that the left in this country are doing now. They're aligning themselves with the Islamic Republic, people like George Galloway, thinking that, oh no, we have to align them ourselves. Where actually, he's... I don't know how I got into George Galloway. Don't get me started on Galloway. or Ayatollah Galloway, as he's known around my way. So that was the deal with my father. And then, of course, it became very apparent very quickly that the Ayatollahs weren't going to be the utopia alternative. And then he started criticising them, and they were on a bit of a killing spree. And my father's situation, I have to stress, was by no means unique. Absolutely not unique at all. But, so he carried on. He started a publication in exile in Britain in the Persian language, still criticising them, which is like a cross between Private Eye and Viz. Every Friday we'd all get together and prepare his newspaper, his little magazine, and we'd stamp it and label it. It was a sweatshop, but this was the 80s, so the unions were weak, you know. And so... And then in 84 they sent terrorists to shoot him, and this was a plot uncovered by Scotland Yard. And after that, at 11, I thought, okay, he's going to go into plumbing now. But no, he didn't. He carried on writing, and that for me was quite incredible. That being a kid and desperately wishing my dad did something different. And I used to write letters to the Ayatollah and say, look, man, it's not us, it's him. So like, if you want to do anything, can you make sure that I'm not in the car when the bomb goes off, because I've never said nothing against you. I like your beard. I was a total coward, absolute coward.
Did he reply?
No, but in the death order for my father, which I uncovered when I was researching my book, out now at EB Press, they had specified that they were to shoot my dad as he took me and my brother to school, but they'd specified that they were not to harm the children. And when I read this, I thought, oh, I trolling. Yeah, you are softy. Come and have a kush. Yeah, so there you are. I like to think that he read some of my letters.
And for the benefit of our listenership who are dying to know, what's the name of your book?
Right, I didn't choose the name. I wanted to call my book English People Smell of Milk, but they wouldn't let me. I've called it A Beginner's Guide to Acting English, which is about... the Iranian Revolution. I don't know if it's enticing to your readers. Oh, it's laugh a minute.
Well, speaking as an American new to this country, I would probably pick that up for completely the wrong reasons.
Well, yeah,
assume that it was, slang, English slang.
Yeah, it doesn't really do what it says on the tin. I've had letters from people going, oh, I expected a cultural sort of journey into Englishness, and you just banged on about Iran. I was like, sorry.
No, but that's good, I think. I think that's great, because for everyone that wrote you in, I bet there were five others who picked it up and were unknowingly educated.
But you know what I find about being, about when I go to America, I get more English than I ever am. I say things like, I say. I call them,
do you wear a monocle?
Do you know what? I might as well. I say things like, I say, and would you mind awfully, and really bizarre.
Drink nothing but tea and biscuits.
Oh, no, drink nothing but beer. I don't completely lose my sense of Britishness.
No.
Shabby, to finish off, we've been asking all our previous interviewees to tell us something that they know about one of our previous guests tonight.
Well, you know what? We are in the presence of some major charlatans here. Ben Goldacre bought his degree off the internet.
That's huge.
Yeah. Robin Ince is a member of the British Nationalist Party. Mm. He is, in fact, going out to dinner with Nick Griffin the minute this gig finishes.
Wow.
They're having a late night at the Wolsey, no less, and Robin wears Union Jack underpants all the time, and he's never without them. Tim Minchin's songs are pre-recorded. He mimes. Tim mentions Tim mentioned mimes, and the person who actually does his voice is bizarrely the ghost of Cardinal Wolsey. So there we are. You know, I think we're in the presence of some real hypocrites here.
Certainly sounds that way.
I have one follow-up question. How did you first see Robin's flag underpants?
Well, I am a gynecologist, and Robin Ince is actually a woman, and he had some gyne problems, and you know, we set up a little theatre, whatever, surgery backstage once, and I had a look at the inside of his labia, and that's when I noticed the pants. And also because he often wears them on his head.
Especially when he's out with Nick Griffin.
Yes. Please edit the fact that I said labia, because that's rude. Jeez.
No,
I should have said cunt. That's much more polite. Sorry.
The inside of Robin is his cunt. That's perfect. Thank you so much for joining us. Joining us now is Robin Ince, who has been the master of ceremonies tonight.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, thanks for finally sitting down with us, end of the night. How do you think it went?
Well, now you've made me feel like the Joel Grey from Cabaret. I feel far camper than I realised I was at the time that I'd been on stage. I think it went very well. I think what was great was that there was a mix of people doing funny stuff, and some of the stuff about libel was very serious, and you know, Ben Goldacre did a very serious piece about Matthias Rath, and I think it's very interesting when you are in a kind of, you know, theatre that's whatever it is, 1,300 people, that they can have that attention, which means they will listen to someone just talking about stuff and important stuff and not go, where are the gags? And that's what's made the evening great. I think it's been the perfect balance of comedy and information.
Describe how you got into the whole libel reform cause.
Mainly because of Simon Singh, because I'd worked with Simon Singh on a few things, and then we got talking about just when his libel, when it first came up after he wrote the article. And like anything, it's that personal thing where you find out something personal, and you go, but this is preposterous. I had no idea this was going on. I think to most people who are involved in the libel campaign at the moment, no one quite knew about this libel tourism, the fact that in England and Wales we have pretty much the worst libel laws in the world, in a country that's meant to be about free speech and all these things. So, yeah, I think that was basically once I found out, and the first thing I said to someone is, why don't we start putting on gigs? Well, the idea was initially that we put on some gigs where we would build up a certain amount of cash so that journalists or bloggers that were worried about writing pieces, and if their editor, if they're a newspaper, goes, oh, we can't really publish that because even though we know they're a charlatan bamboozling company, at the same time, they're very litigious. And they could go, well, actually, we know that there are lawyers and a pot of cash. Already. So that was part of that. That's, I suppose, really where this show initially came from.
So is that where you anticipate some of the money from this evening to go?
Do you know what? I don't know what's happening with this amount of money. I think Sense About Science may well actually just be a front for some nefarious launderers. But hopefully, eventually, what we'll definitely be doing is putting on big shows where we build up that kind of money. For the time being, I think it's mainly probably going to be campaigning money. I mean, you actually don't make that much money. Strange enough, even doing a 1,300-person theatre, so much of it goes off on costs of the theatre and stuff like that. But I just think it'd be great if we had 100 grand. And I mean, with Simon, there was an interesting, you might have mentioned this when you interviewed him before, but he was interviewed a while back by an Australian journalist, and there was some stuff about homeopathy there, and the editor of the newspaper, whoever it was, said, can you take out the bits about homeopathy, because I think there might be problems. And then what happened was basically the journalist said, well, I'm not going to do that feature at all then. I'm going to write a feature about why I can't publish or write about what I feel I should write about. And, of course, this isn't merely about science, it's also about politics. It's about, I mean, Marcus Brigstocke was saying that he's sometimes worried that our libel laws will, if they change, will it protect even more the nefarious and dubious and tittle-tattle-loving journalists? But do you know what? They're doing fine anyway. With the libel laws we have, it's not as if you go, oh, the newspapers at last can start publishing tittle-tattle and nonsense. It's generally being used, as far as I can see, to get the small person, the lone individual, the big companies are not being...
But it would be a good thing, because there's obviously not enough homophobia and that sort of thing in the newspapers at the minute. I mean,
we could use more.
Yeah.
I think there aren't enough. There isn't enough misinformation about the Islamic community. There's not enough about Islamofascism.
So, Robin, we've been asking everybody who we've interviewed previously to say some terrible things about each other.
You know, something
maybe
like
libelous.
Maybe Sense About Science is a front for some other organization.
Yeah.
It's
a group of rampant Marxists, right-wing Marxists, who are insistent on dragging down the world into a hideous libertarian cesspit.
And how about your fellow speakers tonight?
Well, Tim Minchin's very interesting because he has beautiful eyes, and those beautiful eyes are actually taken. He has an enormous cellar with blind children. Who all of them? It's horrible. It's like one of that famous painting. I can't remember who by now of soldiers, gas soldiers leaving the trenches, blinded. That's what his cellar looks like. That his eyes only last for a week, and he removes the eyes of children. And most of the rest of the people on are probably the main movers and shakers in the snuff movie market. I mean, a lot of money that goes to South America is really from the underground snuff market, where Dara Brian gets children to dress up as his favourite scientists. And they get a really large, fat Mexican wrestler to fuck the small child dressed as whether it be Einstein, Niels Bohr, whoever.
I really want to see this film.
Yeah, I saw that actually.
It's the film, it's a little bit like Cronenberg's Videodrome. If you stay up late enough at night and you keep going through, eventually you suddenly just hit the signal briefly of seeing the mini pop science version.
Well, thank you very much, Rob.
Is that litigious?
We'll find out.
You've been listening to Little Atoms. You can find details of upcoming guests on our website, littleatoms.com. The Little Atoms podcast is available on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
Myself, my hands are tied, I can't say a word. It's a crazy world, it doesn't matter if I can prove it. It's a crazy world, it doesn't matter about the science, when it doesn't matter about the science. We gotta have the right to talk about it, when it's toxic waste that kills. We gotta have the right to read about it, when it's bad science with no skills. By the dead hand of the law, of bad law. We must be able to defend ourselves and dig our heels in for the just cause. To stand up for what we feel is right, not to be bankrupted by the law, bankrupted by the law.